This is Robert Martellacci, the Mindshare Learning Report, Canada's learning and technology e-magazine. This month's issue focuses on the power of gaming in education, and I have the good fortune of having a Mindshare Learning moment with Dr. Jennifer Jensen, who is the professor of pedagogy and technology in the Faculty of Education at York University. She is the outgoing president of a scholarly society to support digital games research in Canada and internationally, and the Canadian Games Studies Association. She is also co-editor of the Society's journal Loading. Her research and publication includes work on gender and technologies, gender and digital gameplay, players and identifies in massively multiplayer online games like World of Warcraft. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Jensen.
Thank you, Robert.
The power of gaming is the theme of the February Mindshare Learning Report. What attracted you to focus on gaming as an area of research?
The main thing that attracted me was that kids were playing games all of the time, and they were using a lot of their leisure hours to play games. And so this was a while ago, back in 1997, I thought it would be a good idea to start figuring out what attracted them so much to games. What about them caught and held their attention when in education we have a really hard time doing that? And so that was one reason. But the other reason was is that at least at the time there were not a lot of people looking at what are kids learning when they are playing these games, or are they learning anything at all? And I think we're still stuck on that question. What are they learning, and are they learning anything at all?
Fascinating stuff. There's a distinction between game-based learning versus gaming as a learning tool. I was just at the Brock EdTech Showcase and had the good fortune of sitting in on a session on gaming. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize the distinction, but perhaps you can share that with us.
Well, I think that the difference between game-based learning and gaming as a learning tool is that game-based learning is actually learning as you're playing. And it can actually be using games designed specifically for education, but it could also be using other kinds of commercially available games. And so for me, gaming as a learning tool approaches it as if the game were the learning tool. So there, that's the distinction mm-hmm. for me. I'm not sure how they would have done that at Brock. But gaming as a learning tool actually means that we don't have to focus on the technology per se. We can use games generally to sort of capture and hold the attention of players. So that could include live-action role-playing games. That could include pervasive games, which use or lower tech. And it could include augmented reality games if you want to. Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. Your research is focused on gender and digital gameplay. It sounds fascinating, particularly as a parent of twin boys and a daughter who enjoy gaming. What insights can you share for educators who are new to gaming and looking to understand the culture of kids and how to integrate into the classroom?
First thing up is that boys kind of own the area. They play games more than girls. They claim the space more than girls. And even if they don't necessarily play games at home, they act as if they do, or they play at their cousin's house or something else. Right. For girls, they don't necessarily have quite as much hands-on access as boys, and they don't necessarily claim the space. So one little anecdote by way of example. We were in a school last year, and it was a kindergarten class, and we had designed an iPad game. And we had decided that we wanted to give the kids a little bit of a survey before, and we were helping them fill it out. And this little girl put up her hand. She's like, Miss, what about me? What do I do? And we kind of were like, yeah, just fill out the survey. She kept saying it, and we just finally, one of us went over and she said, no, I mean, what do I do? I don't play games. What survey do I fill out? And so that's even, you know, at the youngest kindergarten.
Right.
So
right.
I think that what we have to do in education is realize that if we're going to use these as learning tools or tools for learning, that we have half of our population in schools that might not necessarily be gamers.
Right.
And that it might not be the tool for them.
Right. And the types of games as well, are they designing games that are suited, like gender neutral, for example? Like, you know, my guys like to shoot 'em up games and car racing. And, you know, not all girls are into that, I guess.
Well, I think we don't know because they don't get enough access. So the worst thing about the gendered products is that if they want to sell to girls, they make it pink. And most girls don't necessarily like pink. It's not always their favorite color. So I think that we need to just actually give girls the opportunity to decide whether or not they like shooters. Strangely enough, I've had more undergraduates in the last year who are female who claim to play first-person shooters than I've had in all of my other 15 years in total. So I think that it might be shifting, not completely.
Shift happening, perhaps.
Yeah.
Now, there are many potential benefits for learning through gaming, and there are pitfalls. The notion of digital literacy and digital citizenship comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the benefits are actually not necessarily playing the game. They're actually talking about that in a larger media literacy discussion, where you do critique, where you talk about what, you know, was done badly about the game, where you have a discussion of mechanics, etc. I think there are a few pitfalls. One is that it takes a lot of tech if you're playing digital games. And as anyone who's been in any school knows, it breaks all the time.
Yes.
So that's a big pitfall.
Right.
But I think the other thing is that it's not actually necessarily knowing what kids are going to learn or do. And I think that that can be a pitfall because you expect that it's going to go one way and it all of a sudden goes, you know, 180 degrees the other way.
Right.
And you don't really know if what you had them do was successful. But we try things out in education all the time. And I think that having discussions about games and what kids are playing, especially when I hear from 10-year-old boys that they're playing first-person shooters, is something that we want to happen more in schools, not less.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, what about augmented reality? I saw some of that when I was at the Frankfurt Book Fair last year. They had a special area on gaming and augmented reality. That seems to be... And then the Google Glasses concept, I've tried those.
Yeah.
Do you see that being integrated?
I think it'll be interesting if the tech can go mainstream enough.
Right.
I think right now it's too specific.
Right.
And Google Glass doesn't look like it's going to be a really cheap commodity to start.
No, definitely not.
So I think that that's kind of a wait and see for me. And I think that for me also, we don't necessarily need the latest tech in schools. We need good pedagogy.
Right. Excellent point. Excellent point. You've actually designed and developed digital games in your Play CES lab. What is the one that you're most proud of?
I think the game that we're most proud of out of the Places Labs was a game that we designed for Toffel Music Baroque Orchestra. And we took what was in a Juno-winning CD called The Quest for Rundo Donax.
Cool.
Who knew what a Rundo Donax was, but we found out. And we created a game where kids could kind of play along using mechanics from Dance Dance Revolution and Guitar Hero. And the funnest part was that we took these kids through York one summer, 100 of them, and they all played the game. And we had kids who were listening to all kinds of music coming in. And if we'd taken them to the orchestra, I don't think that they would have appreciated the music as much, but they would leave our playtesting session humming Baroque music. So we felt like we got it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Will you be doing that summer camp type of thing again?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. You're actively involved in the gaming community in Canada. Can you suggest some resources available for teachers and parents? And parents are an important stakeholder group as well that we try not to ignore and get more immersed more in what we do.
Right. So I think there's two things that I would suggest. One's for parents. I think that they should check out the ESRB rating, which is the Entertainment Software Review Board rating, on any game that they're going to buy their kids. The number of times I've heard kids tell me that how they got their parents to buy something like Grand Theft Auto 5 was by telling them it was a racing game is phenomenal. So I think that for parents, check out those kinds of sites, read reviews of the games, have conversations with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of resources that do that, but the best resources are the gaming sites themselves.
Okay.
Look at those, read those reviews,
sure.
Find out what your kids are doing. And I think the other thing is, I would say the same thing for teachers. Find out what the latest games are coming out. Have a conversation with your students about it. Make a media literacies, you know, activity or piece of curriculum around it. There is a scholarly society in Canada, which you mentioned in your introduction to me, Canadian Game Studies Association. We're the only scholarly society outside of Japan that operates on a national basis.
Wow.
Yep.
There isn't one in the U.S. that exists?
No, there is not.
Impressive.
We are the only one in North America, and we're national. And we have folks who, you know, published research in the area of gaming and game-based learning. A lot of those publications are through our journal, Loading, and you can find that online.
Fantastic. That'll be most helpful to the folks who are looking to get more up to speed on gaming, because as a parent, I'm not up on it myself. I've done a little gaming, but not much. So are you a big gamer yourself?
I don't have enough time to game, but yes, I do. I play. I'm currently grinding my way through a Japanese role-playing game called Ni no Kuni.
Oh.
And over Christmas, I started the latest Tomb Raider, and my favorite game of all time is Frogger.
And what's the objective of Frogger?
Cross the road without getting smushed.
How fun is that? Now, there are, in learning, there's intrinsic and extrinsic rewards. And Jeremy Friedberg from SpongeLab, he talked about that at our conference. What's your perspective on motivating kids from both intrinsically and extrinsically, as gaming tends to do with levels and badges and that sort of thing?
I think we know in education that badges and rewards work really well. That's why we would do library drives to have a class read the most books, and it's why we passed out stickers.
Right.
So we've known this for a while, that those extrinsic rewards are very useful.
Right.
I think what games do, what a scholar by the name of Jonas Lindroth says, what they might do really well is give you a kind of continuous illusion of learning. Because what they do is they give you a few skills,
right,
and then they have you apply those skills in different ways. It's the same skills.
Right.
It's just you might have to hit the button faster.
Sure.
Or you might have to change your approach a bit. So the challenge for me is figuring out, what is it that keeps that person motivated to play, even though it's not really all that interesting at some point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these games, you do a lot of wandering around.
Repetition.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And some of that is not extrinsically motivated. Some of that is you want something. You want to accomplish something, or you want to be able to beat the big boss faster than you were able to do. So what we haven't figured out, and I think where Jeremy and I both struggle in the games that we build, is that when you actually do the carrot stick approach, sometimes it works, sometimes it really doesn't.
Yes.
And when you lay educational content over the top of what should be a fun mechanic, it doesn't always work either. So it's those kinds of things that we keep in tension.
Fascinating.
A lot. Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Robert.
That was Dr. Jennifer Jensen, Professor of Pedagogy and Technology at York University's Faculty of Education. My name is Robert Merdlanche, the MindShare Learning Report. And until next time, keep the learning curve steep.